Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
And joining us, the outstanding Tim Kirchen. Tim, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. My pleasure.
Well, it's not as if the place hasn't hosted a World Series before, but this time they get the Rangers in it instead of the Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays. When you look at the respective paths that these two teams took, what stood out to you about each?
Well, I was really impressed by their resiliency. The Rangers lost 8 games in a row and 20 out of 30 late in the season and somehow pulled it back together for October and then have played, obviously, exceptionally well since. The Diamondbacks lost 9 in a row from June in August, and from like late June until August the 11th, I think they went 14-36. That's how bad they were. Yeah. And they pulled it together also. When you are facing adversity and people are questioning every move you make, and somehow you come back from that, that's what's really impressive to me. This is the first World Series ever where the two teams in it each had an 8 or 9 game losing streak during the season, and yet both made it to the World Series. It's a really hard game to play. It can really humble you, and when you get humbled and still find a way to come back and play really well, that's the most impressive part.
Philadelphia had been rolling, especially on offense, in their wins over the Marlins and the Braves. And they got off to a great start against Arizona. In the first two games, Corbin Carroll was in the leadoff spot. Broken bat, single right center field. Second game, game two, led off, grounded to short. Turner couldn't make the play, he beat him out. Each time he stayed at first and never tried to steal. And I felt like just gut feeling watching it. Wow, they're tentative. And then I watched them in game 6 and 7, and Carroll's running all over the place. They're running all over the place, and they were aggressive. Did you sense or see the same thing, or is there something else you sensed about it?
No, I saw the same thing. The reason the Diamondbacks are where they are is because they're young, hungry, fast, athletic, and they take it to the opponent. Buck Showalter taught me a long time ago, when you're in October, and the other team, at least in theory, is better than you, and the Dodgers, let's say, were better than the Diamondbacks. They beat them by 16 games. If someone's better than you, you have to go right after them immediately. You have to throw the first punch, and that's what the Diamondbacks did during the series in Arizona against the Phillies and in those two games in Philadelphia. They took the crowd out of the game, and they had a bunch of young, hungry kids who said, go ahead, try to throw me out of here. If you do, good for you, but we're coming right after you. And not just stealing second, going first to third, the way they approached at bats, the way they pitched. They just were more aggressive than the Phillies were, and they can be aggressive because they're young and they're athletic and they can get away with some mistakes. That was the difference that I saw.
What did you think of Arizona's bullpen, especially down the stretch and in the postseason?
Well, it was really good. I mean, Paul Sewald is the closer that they acquired from Seattle. I'm still shaking my head over that one. Why would Seattle trade such a good reliever? I did the Mariners in the playoffs last year against Toronto. No one could hit that guy. Now, they had, you know, they had other closer options there. Munoz is a really good pitcher, but I still don't understand why you traded that guy, because he had a great year. He ended up with 34 saves with two teams. And he's the biggest difference on that team the last 2 months after the trade deadline, as he's solidified the ninth inning. With Kevin Ginkel out there, who's been absolutely unhittable in October, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch the Diamondbacks have right now. And to me, that's the only difference between them over the Rangers, is in theory they have a better bullpen than Texas. But I'll tell you one more time, Steve, do not underestimate the Rangers. I covered all 12 of their games from the booth, two on TV, 10 on the radio, and that is a really, really good team.
No question. And also a really, really good offensive team is Texas along the way. I mean, Seager, Garcia. When you look at the Texas offense, how difficult can they be to deal with for a staff?
Well, they're a nightmare when they're right, because they led the league in runs scored. They led the league in walks by a healthy margin. All nine of their starters can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And every one of those guys, Young and Tavares and Garver and Heim, all of them, those guys are hitting down in the order. Nathaniel Lowe, all had big games. Maybe not all big games, but one or the other was the star of one of the games in this postseason, and that's to go with Garcia, who drove in 15 runs in the LCS, Corey Seager, who was, for the most part, great, Marcus Semien, who wasn't great, and they still won. He's due to get hot. That's what's so dangerous about this team. They have Thunder 1 through 9. They can hit the ball out of the ballpark. Even though they led the league in walks, they are wildly aggressive when they want to be. They get to two strikes, and they shorten up and put the ball in play a little more often. Like I said, this is the best offensive team in the American League, and if you catch them at the wrong time, it's really hard to pitch to them.
Nathan Eovaldi, who made his postseason name in an 18-inning loss to the Dodgers in Game 3 in 2018, what has his steadiness and his mix, especially with his fastball, meant to the front of that rotation?
It's been critical. Brad Miller of the Rangers told me before the playoffs even started, he said, if I could pick one guy from our team to pitch a big game, I would pick Nate Eovaldi. He is totally nails. Now, we didn't know that because, A, he's never started a World Series game, but his postseason record is great. I mean, he's made 9 postseason starts. He's 8-1 with an ERA well under 3. His strikeout-to-walk ratio is tremendous. And his strength is he throws that curveball 76 miles an hour. He throws his split 88 miles an hour. And he throws his fastball 96 miles an hour. That is a really difficult thing for a hitter to try to have to deal with those differences in speeds. Because if you're looking for 76, you're not getting the 96. If you're looking for 96, you're not getting the 76. And then he's got a split in the middle. And he is a wildly competitive guy, which we saw that night in L.A. when he pitched 6 innings, 97 pitches. He got the loss, and he got a standing ovation from his teammates when he walked in the Boston clubhouse after the game, because everyone in there knew he saved our pitching staff. We lost the game, but he just won the World Series for us because he saved our pitching staff from getting exhausted.
Right, exactly. Muncy finally won it in the 18th inning, but he actually, you know, they may have won that battle that night, but Eovaldi was a big reason why they won the World Series war. So, when you look at Zach Gallen, what do you see in him that's allowed him to be a 17-game winner?
Well, he was one of the best pitchers in the game the first half of the year. He started the All-Star game. He's got great command. He's got 3 really good pitches. But he did indeed struggle down the stretch, other than an amazing 1-0 shutout at Wrigley against the Cubs. But he's not been at his best in the postseason, and it's a miracle that, you know, he pitched 2 games against the Phillies, and he didn't win either one, and they still beat the Phillies, and he's their best pitcher. So what he does is he competes. He knows how to pitch. He knows what he's doing. He just hasn't been real sharp the last couple months. I fully expect him to get that back, and I fully expect it to be a pitcher's duel in Game 1 in Texas.
Who do you view as pivotal players that if they play well, they swing it one way? If they don't play well, it swings the other?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to that Texas bullpen, which has been a problem for most of the season. 4.77 bullpen ERA, 85 home runs allowed. That's 27th most in the major leagues. If Jose Leclerc, who was mostly great during the postseason, Aroldis Chapman, who was mostly wild during the regular season, and Josh Spores, that's their threesome late in the game. If those guys do, for the most part, what they did in the first 3 rounds, the Rangers are the better team, and the Rangers will win the World Series. I believe that. However, if those guys stumble, and there's always a possibility of that, then the Diamondbacks can win this series for sure. This is an ultimate toss-up World Series, but that's what I would keep an eye on is the Texas bullpen, because to me, that's the only weakness on their team, and it wasn't really a weakness during the postseason.
Tim, always a pleasure. Appreciate it so much.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Talk to you later.